Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here on the home of the 2016 Baltimore Mayoral Debate, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And remind you on our way here to have this conversation with David Warnock, who is running to become the Democratic nominee, that this Thursday night, March the 10th, from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Murphy Fine Arts Center here on Morgan State University's campus, we will have Ask, Listen, Vote, Solutions and Strategies for the Future, where invited candidates will be coming in. It's open to the public. And the debate will be aired live on WEAA. Residents can engage moderators and candidates via Twitter at Baltimore Debate using the hashtag Baltimore Debates, and go to WEAA.org for more help. And you can reserve seats because it's filling up. It's free, open to the public, but come in. We're reserving seats at Baltimore Mayoral Debate, Eventbrite.com. I want you to join us for that on Thursday night. And also, do you want to remember here before we start this conversation with David Warnock? We mentioned at the top of the hour last hour that we lost a former city councilman, judge, and head of our liquor board, Tom Ward, who passed away at 89. Baltimore has always been known as a town of characters. He was one of those characters. I think he was last in the news besides his fight on the liquor board to ensure that communities had control and not the liquor industry. He was before that in the headlines because as some 85-year-old man, he ran down a guy who was trying to break into his house and tackled him and held him down until the police came when he was 85 years old. So Tom Ward was a character. Tracy Ward, who's on our board at Center for Emerging Media, is his daughter. We want our condolences go out to her family. She was, of course, with the publisher of Urbanite. And Tom Ward was really just a feisty, brilliant, interesting guy who did love the city. And so we will mourn his passing and pass our regards on and prayers to his family and all of his friends. And I think the funeral is next Saturday, and we will be there. So let me introduce now once again David Warnock, businessman who is seeking to become the Democratic nominee for mayor of Baltimore. David, welcome back. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be with you. I just add my condolences to Tracy, who's a really fine person.
She's a fine person. She's a great human being. And call in with your comments at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Some tweets have already come in for David Warnock. Comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page. Send us an email with your questions and thoughts to talk@steinershow.org. But if you can grab a phone or allow to, 410-319-8888, you can join us here and have your questions for David Warnock, who's seeking to become the mayor, who will also be joining us this Thursday night at Morgan State University. 410-319-8888. All right, David, so here we go. So there have been a lot of forums. Sounds like there's been more forums than anything else that I've been watching through Baltimore. It sounds like you have one a day.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of forums, but I think it's been really valuable, particularly for me, because I've been able to talk really forcefully and I think effectively about the importance of this election. I do believe it's the most important election of a generation, but also the clear choice that we have. I mean, there are a lot of politicians in the race that have been at it for a long period of time, and I'm clearly offering an alternative, you know, somebody that's been in the city for 33 years, walking the walk when the cameras weren't running. So I welcome all the forums, and it's amazing the great questions that we get, and, you know, we got 50 days left.
And we do. I think one of the things that is so interesting about what we've seen so far is that many of these forums have been very specific in terms of the communities they represent. And the issues they represent. And so things come out in more intense ways about certain issues, which I think are really important for us all to follow, which we'll be doing again here on Thursday night at Morgan State University. One of the things we started off last week with kind of looking at the news and what's happening in our community right now, and we just spoke before you came in with John Comer from Communities United and also who works at Renaissance Academy, and which is, you know, if you look at it from through the standard academic lens, no, the students are not doing really well on tests, but they have one of the lowest dropout rates in the city, and students are staying there. Many students are older and struggling to make it through, and three young men were killed who were associated with that school over the last several months. So if you were mayor, what would be your response to that?
Well, I think that I've talked at length and got a great example. I mean, again, this is about you know, walk on the walk when the cameras aren't running. I co-founded a school called Green Street Academy. And, one of the things that I'm particularly proud of that school is that we've created a true community school model, you know, where we have mental health professionals and traditional health professionals at Green Street Academy, but we're also preparing our kids for a life of work by having them get the certifications in healthcare and in technology and energy with a relationship that we have with BG&E. So, you know, I really believe that we have to prepare our kids for the life of work in today's global economy, where the blue-collar jobs of the future are going to be things like coding and things like programming. But we also have to recognize that our kids in Baltimore City are coming from families that are under stress. Four of my kids since the beginning of the school year have lost their dads to gun-related violence. So, you know, I'm trying to teach them science and math and entrepreneurship at Green Street Academy, and we have a great leadership team at that school. But we got to recognize that our kids are coming to school with baggage that we need to help them address right at the school level.
So how do you do that? You're mayor. I mean, what do you do? I mean, A, what do you do in terms of – are you one of those candidates who thinks that the mayor should control the schools? We'll start there.
I think I'm one of the mayors that believes – I am a mayor that will take responsibility for the schools.
But don't want control back.
Well, I think it's unrealistic for us to get control back from the state anytime
soon.
Why
is that?
Because, frankly, it's the collateral damage with that with respect to the money, right? I think that the mayor needs to simply take control of our public schools, right?
What does that mean for you? I mean, if you're not physically in control like it used to be in the 90s and 80s and 70s, what does that mean for you to
be in
control?
Well, I'll give you a good example. We need to have a partially elected school board, right? When I talk to the parents at Green Street Academy, and I talk to parents all around the city during my 276 neighborhood tour in my pickup truck, people feel completely disconnected from our public schools. They have no idea how our school board is selected. They have no idea how the superintendent is selected. You know, they you know, again, on my Wheel of Misfortune, we talked about $3.6 million worth of annual expenses at North Avenue and ghost employees, right? You know, they have
how much?
$3.6 million. Gregory, this is in the Baltimore Sun, $3.6 million worth of annual expenses at North Avenue in ghost employees and spouses that aren't spouses on the health care plan. Mark, we haven't done an audit of our municipal functions in Baltimore City since William Donald Schaefer was mayor. Now, imagine what we're going to find when we get around to doing that. But I think that our public schools and our faith-based institutions are the true anchors of many of our neighborhoods in this city. And my community school model, as we've done at Green Street, brings faith-based institutions involved in Green Street Academy. It brings mental health professionals, and it brings a focus on certification so that when the kids graduate from high school, they've got something in their back pocket. All of my ninth graders at Green Street are taking an AutoCAD certification. So we got to give kids a toolkit for today's world.
So I want to come back to schools. And folks, do join us here, 410-319-8888. David Warnock is in the studio. He's here to answer your questions. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Join in this conversation here. Log on to our show Facebook page, which I'll be checking. But do join us here, 410-319-8888. Is the number for your questions for David Warnock. We have a couple of tweets that came in. Let's start with those for you. They're both from Anakwenze Agbu, who wrote in. Let's see which comes first. Bear with me one second. Here we go. So it starts with, as mayor, how would you force the CEO and school board to make their current internal audits public? Since you don't have control of the schools, how would you do that?
I would release them. I would release them, right? It would become public because I would release them, right? And again, you know, there's the mayor of this city has always had the capacity, to have a big influence on the selection of the superintendent, on the selection of the school board, although most people in the city haven't the slightest idea how it works, right? I think the governor of this state has plenty of important things to do, and other than managing Baltimore City Public Schools, we need to connect the citizens of Baltimore with Baltimore City Public Schools. And to me, that's more important. Connecting the citizens of Baltimore with our public schools and producing better outcomes in our public schools through a true community school model than engaging in a big battle about taking back control of our public schools. Although I'm perfectly prepared to do that, it's just a matter of priorities.
So 410-319-8888, your thoughts for David Warnock. And the second tweet here, again, from Anakwenze Ogbu, said on Saturday, March the 5th, Coppin State mayoral debate, Nick Mosby stated that you opposed ban the box law. Why? Would you enforce it as mayor?
I felt ban the box did not go far enough because we have the and I have been, and in fact, I'll be in Annapolis tomorrow pushing legislation, just like I pushed last session, to make expungement of non-convictions automatic. Ban the box did not go far enough. We have the easiest to access database of criminal charges and records of any state in the union. Mark, you could pull out your phone and you could look me up in 2 minutes, right? It's easy, right?
Right.
And so employers, if they're interviewing you and me for a job, they're going to immediately look at on the Maryland database of charges and records, right? And 50% of the people who live in Baltimore City who have expungible non-convictions do not get them expunged because it costs money and you have to go through the courts. We need to make expungement of non-convictions automatic. Now, I'm not going to say that ban the box is political theater, but ban the box, there's been no prosecutions for ban the box violations. It was such a big issue. You'd think there'd be some prosecutions for it. There's been no prosecutions for ban. We need to go further. We need to make expungements of non-convictions automatic because that's where the rubber meets the road with respect to people getting employment and people having a fair shot at the employment. And I know that from 15 years at the Center for Urban Families, where I've been the chairman of the board.
But one of the problems is with folks is if you have a record, A, it's hard, almost impossible to get the kind of job you want. And there are many occupations that are where people who have been in prison cannot get simple jobs, whether it's being a nurse's aide or whether it's being a barber or whether it's being a beautician.
Now, that's an entirely different issue, and I totally agree with you. I mean, look, we've got 6,000 young men coming back to our city every year who are returning citizens, right? Most of them were locked up for nonviolent offenses. Most of them were drug-related. A significant percentage of them are fathers. A significant percentage of them are fathers. And by definition, they are in arrears on their child support because they have no capacity to pay when they're locked up. And we did the research. There's $37 million worth of back child support owed the state to reimburse the state for welfare payments made to the mother of the children of these men. And when they come home, they can't have a driver's license. 65% of their W-2 income is garnished. If they open up a bank account, it's garnished. They can't have a professional license. And the collection of it has been outsourced to a for-profit company traded on the New York Stock Exchange called Maximus that gets a piece of the action. And, Mark, they will dog those guys in those five zip codes for that $37 million until they either pay or they die. And if you don't believe that that is a direct tie to the persistence of the drug trade in our city, you have to ask yourself, what would you do if you were 22 years old and you were coming home and you couldn't have W-2 income or 65% of your W-2 income on out the window, and you couldn't have a bank account, and you couldn't have a driver's license? So to me, one of the things that the mayor – and this comes back –
So, what does the mayor do then? So what does the mayor do in that situation?
Well, there are programs like one that we participate in at the Center for Urban Families where if we can get a man in these programs, get him a job, because at the end of the day, this election is about creating jobs and opportunity for people and making people understand things like automatic expungement of non-convictions and the programs that we have that people do not participate in, right? That will allow people to get rid of that back child support if they pay current child support over a 2-year period of time. We need to have a mayor that finally addresses the real collateral issues that are getting in the way of so many people in our city getting in the workforce in addition to creating jobs.
But I don't understand this. There's many things I want to talk about here, of course, this conversation today. But one of the issues that you just said, how does a mayor address the fact that you have all these men, mostly men, coming home to Baltimore City who may have child support payments, have their wages garnished? Why get a job? I mean, so what I'm saying is, what do you do? What can you? Maybe there's something you can do, but what can you do as mayor to address that reality of so many men coming back who could actually turn around people for our communities, but instead are being pushed back even further?
Let me be very specific, right? Two things. One, create jobs. A great example is the things that I've been talking about with respect to housing and public transportation, right? Create jobs. You know, I believe that we create hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs by recycling and demolishing our vacant houses. I created a company by the name of Green Job Works that does just that, that's 40% owned by the Center for Urban Families. I believe that we should have a modified red line that goes from Social Security, stops at the Westside Mark Center, and dead ends at Lexington Market so people can get to those jobs on the east side, and we can put hundreds of people to work because we'll have really seriously enforced local hiring as we build that modified red line. So again, one, it's about jobs, and two, it's about a mayor that takes programs that exist and puts them front and center and addresses like we haven't done in the past. Again, I'm running against politicians that I keep asking, like, where were y'all when the cameras weren't running? Right? Where were y'all when the cameras weren't running? Puts front and center programs like the ones that we have at the Center for Urban Families that we can roll out through this city that will address that back child support issue for those returning citizens and create attitudinal programs and soft skills programs for our returning citizens, as well as skilled-based programs as well. You know, one of the things I'm most proud of at Green Street is that, yes, we're doing Microsoft certifications for the kids in our school. But one of the things that we're going to be doing in the next year there is bringing our parents in to have them get Microsoft certifications as well. You know, this is why we are all in this together.
410-319-8888. We're here with David Warnock, seeking to become the Democratic nominee for the race for mayor of Baltimore. That election, of course, takes place on April 26th. Your last day to register to vote is April the 5th. So register, 410-319-8888. Travis, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, I want to ask Mr. Warnock two questions. I want to ask him, have you been to Annapolis to speak to delegates and the senators about changing the different laws that said people cannot, you know, start home improvement businesses or barbershops and different things if they have this certain kind of record? Also, I want to ask him, he's talking about jobs and everything. I just want to ask him what kind of job bill will he put in? Have he thought of the name? Have he thought of the title? Because I really don't think a lot of these houses need to be torn down. Someone that does real estate investing, I don't think a lot of these houses need to be torn down. I think people need to go in there, extract the lead, hire lead abatement specialists, go in there. But some of these houses need to be knocked down. But the majority of them can be reconstructed into nice houses for single mothers, the homeless, the disabled, and seniors. I mean, we need someone that is going to really focus on community development, economic development, and a quality education for our young people and ex-offenders. We just don't need people to come and talk, and we really need what's going to be. And I know it takes us, the people, but when y'all come to us wanting our vote, when y'all come to us wanting us to vote for y'all, and y'all getting paid to be the mayors and the senators and the delegates, we need y'all to work for us.
Okay.
Well, there's a whole host of questions.
Thanks so much,
there.
Travis. Great questions.
And Travis, I would just ask you to look at what I've done when the cameras weren't running. For the last 15 years, I've been on Monroe Street, and I've been there day and night talking to people. I'll be down in Annapolis tomorrow working on legislation that we proposed last year that hopefully will get passed this year that will make expungement of non-convictions automatic. I became knowledgeable about that, and I became knowledgeable about the oppressive nature of our child support collection policies by spending days and nights at the Center for Urban Families talking to people who are trying to get in the workforce. So, you know, I've been walking the walk. And with respect to your housing thoughts, I totally agree with you. I mean, I am not going to be a proponent of tearing down every vacant house in our city. And one of the things we have to look at is making sure that we reward the pioneers that are staying in our city with the ability to purchase a house that's next door in a realistic way, you know, for a low price. Or when we do tear down a house, have people be able to get that side yard for $100 like they do in Chicago. That's a great strategy because it gets it on the tax roll. And most people will take care of that side yard better than the city will. So, again, I believe that because we have a big housing problem, we have a big housing opportunity. And, again, I started a company called Green Job Works. And, again, this is what you do when the cameras aren't running. That's 40% owned by the Center for Urban Families, 60% owned by the management of that company. It has 125 people doing demolition and remodeling. In fact, when we redid the Gwynns Falls Middle School, where Green Street Academy is located, with a public-private partnership, we put $20 million in that building, which is where Elijah Cummings and William Donald Schaefer both went to junior high. Green Job Works did the demolition and remediation of that building. The people also get lead paint and asbestos certifications. So, again, it's about creating real strategies that are really things that I've been doing for a long time.
Let's go back to the phones here. Thank you for that call for Travis at 410-319-8888. Call to take us to break and keep calling in here, folks. 410-319-8888. We'll be checking the tweets at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Bill, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, first, thank you, Mark.
Morning, Bill.
My question is a two-part question. Number one, the money that's been promised from the casino as well as the lottery that's supposed to have went to public schools, how would you make sure that the city get the money that they don't get that they're supposed to get? Secondly, my other part of the question is this, is that the drugs and weapons that the police confiscate off the street, why shouldn't we have a citizens group to witness to make sure them drugs and weapons is destroyed? How would you do that?
Thank you so much for both calls, Bill. I mean, questions, Bill.
You know, I think with respect to your latter comment, I think that's a very interesting idea. I think we should study it. I can see no reason why that's not something that we should at least – again, I'm about transparency in city government. You know, again, I was talking about the $3.6 million worth of ghost employees and spouses that weren't spouses that we found at North Avenue. You know, again – we haven't had an audit of our municipal functions since William Donald Schaefer was mayor. You know, we need to get a handle on our financing in this city. You know, one of the things that I keep talking about, and it was on our wheel of misfortune, was that, you know, every single public pension plan in this city is on the verge of insolvency, with the exception of one. And that's the pension plan for elected employees, which is 40% overfunded. You know, you can't make up this stuff. They just happen to be true. So, you know, again.
I think we have to get a short break here. We're going to come right. No, you can finish that thought. Then we'll go to break.
Let's go to break.
So, I mean, because I saw that in your Wheel of Misfortune. And I've talked about that specific thing on the air in months past, not for a while. But it was an issue here on the show a couple of years ago. So what do you do about that is the question. How do you alter that? How do you ensure that I don't mean just for – I mean it's always kind of very sexy and glamorous to talk about fire and police, and the firemen do it – you know, they run into buildings and not away from them when the fires – some of my the heroes of my life are people who go to save our lives in those fires. But there's all kinds of other city employees, whether they're Rec and Parks workers or the woman who answers the phone at City Hall. They're all in the same situation as the fire and the police. So City Hall employees in general, their retirement is shaky.
Retirement is shaking.
So what does a mayor do? What do you do to change that and to ensure that they have adequate retirement? Because retirees across the country, whether it's in the private sector or the public sector, are getting screwed right and left. So how do you change that?
I'll be quick and I'll be crisp, right? Mark, we're running a $744 million deficit in the city over the next 6 years. The current mayor is the one talking about bankruptcy, right? Now, in bankruptcy in Detroit, the people who are paying for the bankruptcy of Detroit, you know, the banks wrote down the debt. They went and left, right? The unsecured creditors wrote it off. The people who are paying for the bankruptcy of Detroit for the rest of their lives are the people who thought that they had a secure defined benefit pension plan. Those people will be paying because their defined benefit plan got crushed in a bankruptcy. So the way you deal with it is you make sure that you lower the cost of the investments by looking at things like index funds. But more importantly, You get a handle on the city financings so that we don't put the promises at risk. We've already not been able to keep our promises with respect to the length of time for vesting into pension plans, right? We have to have a city that has a handle on its financing, if for nothing else, so that we can keep our promises to people who've given their lives and employment to this city.
So we got to take a break here. I'm not a question about that, but we'll also go to the phones here. Tiffany, the next caller up. Tiffany and Kenneth will come to your calls. Call us here at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Write us some email questions. Talk at steinershow.org. We'll be back with David Warnock, who's seeking to become your mayor. Stay with us. Back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show, on the home of the 2016 mayoral debate. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we are talking here with David Warnock, who is seeking to become the next mayor of Baltimore City. On our way back to the conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn more about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. We were talking about this again, and then we're going to go right to Tiffany, the next caller up, and then Kenneth, you're right after her. But it's a real question because, I mean, we talk about finding savings in the city budget. The city contributes cash to people's retirement funds. This is not talked about very much, but it's a very real issue. How do you literally change that? You can't we're already saying that we don't have enough money to manage the city with the budget that we have. So where does the money come from to protect the retirees of the city?
Well, first and foremost, you have to understand where we're spending the money. I mean, here's a great example. On my wheel of misfortune, we spend more on and we spend more on police overtime than we do on the entire budget for youth recreation.
About $2 or $3 million, right?
Right. I mean, like, you know,
million,
again,
right?
You know, I wish I could tell you why we're spending all that money on police overtime, but we need to get a handle on it. We need to get a handle on it. It's all connected, Mark, right? Until we get a handle on why we're spending money on police overtime, and I'm not questioning that it's probably – there's probably a reason for it. But until we get a handle on our financing, right, then I can't promise tax cuts to everybody who wants a property tax cut in Baltimore City. I can't even say to people who are depending on the promise of a defined benefit plan that in the long run we can keep that promise when the level of the difference between revenues and expenses in our city is currently unsustainable, right? And, you know, so again, first and foremost, we need to have real independent audits of our municipal functions. I'm the guy in the race that's actually been on audit committees. So, you know, and again, I you know, having been on many audit committees, I know how to do this.
Let me go back to the phones. David Warnock, 410-319-8888. Tiffany, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me. Sorry to go back to the other topic, but I wanted to ask Mr. Warnock, since it didn't seem like you can really do anything on the back end in terms of returning citizens, on the front end, how are you willing to support programs out there that are working with parents of children and mothers in particular, so that they won't have to put their child's father on child support, and working through some issues so that they can work out an arrangement where the dad is directly giving support to the child? You know, what types of support are you willing to give, and how can those programs contact you in order to make that happen?
Well, you know,
great question. Thank you so much. It's a really good question.
At the end of the day, it's about the things that I've been doing for a long time. You know, we have got to find ways to put our returning citizens to work, just like we have to create jobs and opportunities throughout this great city. You know, all of these issues are opportunities. They're all connected, because we will increase the tax base of our city by creating more jobs and opportunity. One of the things that I feel really strongly about is that we have to have a strong public transportation system in this city. You know, this Thursday, I'll be doing doing a ride to work program, and I would encourage anybody who we're having a little bit of a challenge to see the most difficult public transportation ride to work, and I'll be riding public transportation with people on Thursday to highlight how disconnected our public transportation system is. And so, you know, it is connected to your question, because there's going to be thousands of jobs over the next 5 years that will be created in the old Sparrows Point, just like there are hundreds of jobs that were created in the new BJ's and the new Amazon on the east side of Baltimore. But yet people on the west side, and I know this from Green Street, and I know this from walking the walk on Hilton Parkway and Monroe Street, people simply can't get to those jobs on the west side of Baltimore. We need to create a public transportation system that's respectful of people and creates the situation where the men that you are talking about can get to employment on the east side of Baltimore. And at the same time, we will put hundreds of people to work building those public transportation systems. So we have to create jobs and opportunity so people can fulfill the promises that they've made to each other. And at the same time, the city will be able to fulfill its promise that it's made to its employees and, frankly, everybody that lives here.
So when you talk about this transportation system, how are you going to pay for that? I mean, that was a great idea. Look, I have my issues with the Red Line. I have bigger issues with Governor Hughes canceling the Red Line. But so you keep talking about this Red Line you want to build. So how are you going to do that?
Well, it's clear that if you talk to Governor Hogan, that his big problem with the Red Line was he didn't feel that we needed to build a tunnel underneath the city. And, you know, when you talk about there's a lot of tunnel proposals being done in our city right now. Many of them will have the potential to shake up the neighborhoods underneath them. So, you know, in addition to being very costly, that was his big problem with the Red Line. And one of the things that I fundamentally believe is that we can get the Hogan administration, because he understands that Baltimore is the economic engine of the state of Maryland, and the health of Baltimore is critically important to the nation's perception of this state. And so I fundamentally believe, having talked with them, that we can get state funding. We'll have to go back for federal funding. And we can go back and we can get the money to do a modified Red Line that goes from Social Security, stops at the Westside Mark Center, and dead ends at Lexington Market, where it connects with the subway that already exists and the light rail that goes north and south. That's where we're going to get it.
Okay. I wish you luck if you become mayor to do that, but getting Governor Hogan to sign on anything for Baltimore City is not going to be an easy trick to do. And our transportation system, as you know from the forum that we ran on transportation a couple of weeks back, is a huge issue for most working people and students in this city, and young millennials who want to make this thing work because they don't want to use cars.
And on my wheel of misfortune, one of many that you can't make up this stuff, Mark, right? So the Department of Transportation issues its so-called audit. They say that 1 out of 7 bridges in Baltimore City are unsafe, and yet they have no documentation as to which are the one. Right. Every time I drive across a bridge, I think, oh boy, I hope this is 1 of the 6 out of 7. Right. You know, I mean, did they just make up these numbers? I just really don't know. Right. I mean, and I don't think anybody else does. 1 out of 7 bridges in our city are deemed unsafe. And yet we don't have the slightest idea what they are.
Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888 here with David Warnock, who's seeking to become the nominee, Democratic nominee, to run for the general election for the mayor of Baltimore City. 410-319-8888. Kenneth, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Kenneth.
Yes. Whenever I can catch in, with due respect, whenever I can catch a mayor incumbent on the radio talk show, I try to whenever I can. Because if you become mayor, I hear a lot of promises. I hear all this. I mean, we know. I mean, let's be straight up. I would expect you to hit the ground running on health care, hit the ground running on homelessness. Yesterday, I was riding through the city, and I saw tents under the bridge. And I go through Baltimore a lot. I haven't been down that way lately. I see tents. I mean, tents popping up everywhere. homelessness. I mean, you know, I've been in D.C. I'm from D.C., but I've been in Baltimore for 25 years. And I've heard a whole lot of promises, and I just get tired of hearing the promises. You have got to, if you're going to be mayor, you have got to hit the ground running on these issues. Potholes, you know, you can get jobs for potholes alone. Now we got potholes on our interstate highways, you know. I don't know what you can do about that, but healthcare is not always cracked up to be. There's just so many issues that need our attention right now, need the people's attention. We need a people's mayor. We don't need a mayor that's going to be working with politicians for money unless it's going to be put to good use. We need someone that's going to do audits in the housing. Especially in housing.
We talked about that a minute ago.
Well, let me respond to those. You know, again, I am the candidate in the race that is not the politician, right? I'm a business person. I have been in this city walking the walk for 33 years. I totally agree with you on homelessness. I was on the board of the National Alliance to End Homelessness when we put together the 10-year plan to end homelessness, which has been adopted in cities across the country. It's been adopted in Baltimore, but it's never been executed on. Homelessness is a function of two things. One, the lack of jobs, because many people who are homeless are between jobs. And so if you think about my housing plan and putting people to work in housing, in some ways it's a homelessness plan, because by putting people to work, that portion of the homeless population will not be homeless anymore because they'll have employment. But the other important element to homelessness that we know from the research is that permanent supportive housing is absolutely critical to ending homelessness, and it's core to a 10-year plan to end homelessness. Shelters don't end homelessness. They basically warehouse people who don't get the treatment that they need and end up on the streets over and over again. So I will make a serious investment, and I will make a serious priority permanent supportive housing for people with mental disabilities, drug and alcohol addiction, because again, drug and alcohol addiction should be thought of as a health problem. We need 24-hour on-demand, like Lena Wen, our health commissioner, is a proponent of, 24-hour on-demand treatment for drug and alcohol.
So picking up on the homelessness thing, so I'm curious how you would do that. I mean, a percentage of people who are homeless do work.
Yes.
They don't get paid enough to afford the rents in the city. Even the HCD, the Housing Community Development's own study, showed that of the 238,965 households in Baltimore, 38.6% of those can't afford their monthly housing costs. We had 150,000 eviction notices filed last year in Baltimore. So it is jobs, but it's a certain kind of jobs. It's also a huge systemic problem.
And an interesting problem, because it's a problem of mobility, right? The reality is 3 out of 4 counties surrounding Baltimore City allow landlords to discriminate against people with Section 8 vouchers. Right. Now, unless we have a mayor that makes it a priority to change that. Right. I mean, that is discriminatory in and of itself, because it reduces mobility for people, forces people into the city, into a limited supply of below market rate housing and subsidized housing. And we got to end that. We got to end that kind of discrimination. Landlords in our surrounding county should not be able to discriminate against people with Section 8 vouchers. You know, again, they're just pushing people right back into the city, eliminating the mobility. And in the absence of public transportation, we have people that are literally trapped in East and West Baltimore without access to economic opportunity and without access to good housing.
So what is the emphasis for your administration go, and how do you? I know you said in the show once before that anybody who gets a TIF in Potholes has to build a rec center, but I think that's a lovely idea, but it goes beyond rec centers. And this is what I read to another candidate last week. I'll read it to you again, then we'll open the phones again. So right now, Baltimore taxpayers, in terms of TIFs, are providing a $17.5 million TIF to Blackstone, which has $80 billion of capital, at the end of 2015, a net income in 2015 of $2.2 billion, five executives together making over $212 million. And so where that $17.5 million is immaterial to this behemoth, as this person wrote to me the other week, and at a conservative estimate, that could build 175 homes and dozens of jobs at $100,000 per house. I mean, it's upside down here, where we're giving tips to these huge huge companies while our own communities go asking and for wanting.
Well, you've studied Blackstone closer than I have, so I'll take your analysis of that company at face value. But, I mean, here's a great example. And the question
is, let's say for argument's sake it's true.
I agree.
You can come back and say, Mark, you're all wrong. I found something different. But let's say my argument's sake.
I don't doubt it one bit, right? But the question is, who do the shareholders of the city of Baltimore want to have representing them? Because the reality is we are all shareholders. We are all stakeholders in this great city, right? And take, for example, what happened at Harbor East, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Right now our school funding is being cut because our property values are going up, and yet because we signed these TIFs and pilots with people who are making major campaign contributions to current politicians who are in the race, our current cash receipts are down, right? The reality is, Mark, we just simply got out negotiated, right? I mean, I'll be generous and say that. We simply got out negotiated, right? The reality is we need a business person in the mayor's office, one, to get a handle on our financings, but two, when we're dealing with these public entities, when we're dealing with these sophisticated entities who have clearly out-negotiated the city in the past, right? Who do you want to have on the front lines representing the citizens of Baltimore? And I'm telling you right now, at this critical point in our city's history, we need to have somebody with a business mind doing that.
I'm going to come back with a question about that, but let me go back to the phones first. And people are calling in to talk with you. David Warnock, who's seeking to become the Democratic nominee for the race for mayor of Baltimore, which takes place April 26th, our debate here at Morgan State University with the City Paper and the Afro and the spokesperson, is this Thursday night at 7 o'clock. 410-319-8888. Patricia, you're on the air.
I have three questions. I'm a city resident, and I'll just ask the question, and he can answer when he gets off.
Okay.
First of all, the city has had a huge payout, at least two or three. Number two, we are paying, from what I'm hearing, that we are still paying past police commissioners. And number three, the city council and the mayor gave themselves a raise before she leaves. And my question is, the city residents are still paying high property taxes. We have a lot of abandoned houses, which means you're not getting property tax from there. And number four, when these large companies come to the city, they're getting incentive, and they do not pay the same property tax that we do. Now, my question is, where is all this money going to come from to what he's promising? And I'll just listen off the air. Thank you.
Thank you so much, David Warnock.
Well, yes, 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 and yes. Again, I would just reinforce that the only public pension plan that's overfunded in our city is the one for elected officials. You know, we continue to get out negotiated on every front. You know, we need to have a mayor that has a business mind that first and foremost understands the financing of our city, gets a handle on our city functions so that we can look at reducing your property taxes. I wish I could promise you a cut in your property taxes, but I'm not going to do that because I think it's irresponsible, right, until we get a handle on our city's financing, right? And the answer is, yes, we are probably still paying long-term contracts that the city's entered into. Maybe they were out negotiated on those too. But the fact of the matter is that this is a critical point in time. You know, we are burning $75 million in cash every year, $744 million of projected deficits over the next 6 years. We need to have somebody that can first and foremost get a handle on that, and then we can have then we can look at where we want to reallocate the money that we save. Because, again, if we found $3.6 million worth of ghost employees and spouses that weren't spouses at North Avenue, I doubt we're going to find that we're underspending in a variety of municipal departments.
Let me go back to the phones here. I have another question and a tweet, and I'm going to come back to the business plan question if we have time. 410-319-8888. I hope I say the name correctly. Okiki? Okeke? You're
Hi.
On the air.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
What do you say your name is? Snipe? What is your name?
Please David start. Warnock. His name is Warnock. David Warnock, running for mayor.
It reminds me of Rick Snyder, who fled Michigan, and he comes in with this Mr. Businessman mentality and running that place or that city
right.
from a business a perspective.
The governor of Michigan.
So, I don't know if I like what you're saying, because when you get corporate or profits over people, it makes me wonder. And I don't hear much about social programs. And you make it all about the fiscal books and, oh, we got to look at the books. And you're making it like, oh, the politicians are people who aren't in so-called the business world as long as you have been. They have no smarts. But I beg to differ. I don't think that Baltimore is that bad off. There are places that are worse. And you need to answer Mark's previous question and not go around it. And I don't hear really your solutions for jobs. I just hear you doing that business corporation, a big business over people stuff. So that talk doesn't sway me.
Okay, let me let David Warnock respond.
Well, again, I would just ask you to look at my record, you know. I was the chairman of the Center for Urban Families for 15 years. And, you know, it's now, if not the largest, one of the largest workforce development programs in Baltimore. We've had 25,000 people go through our programs on the way to a better life and jobs and opportunity. I've put countless hours, time, and money into an organization that's truly created transformative change in our city. We did the same thing with Green Street Academy. Is now the most chosen middle school in the city, even though it has a third of our kids have IEPs. So, you know, it's not a school that's selected from just the best and the brightest. We take all comers at Green Street Academy, have a 125-foot-long greenhouse and a tilapia farm that the kids manage in addition to solar panels. So, you know, with respect to walking the walk and caring about people who are truly trying to get ahead in our city, I would just ask you to look at the track record. What have I done when the cameras weren't running? And at the same time, I've created businesses and jobs, and frankly, the organizations that I've been involved with have either hired or put to work hundreds of people, and that's documented. And so, you know, again, we need to have somebody that understands the heart of Baltimore. I came to Baltimore 33 years ago in that pickup truck with a load of student loans and the promise of a job. And Baltimore has given me everything that I have. I am deeply grateful for it. And I think this election, if nothing else, is giving back to this city and trying to change the arc of a great American city.
So it's what Okiki was saying, and I understand what she was saying, and I just wanted to ask this question. I'm going to try to get this other tweet in here. I mean, part of the issue for people is when you say I'm a businessman and I run the city is people have seen the city give lots of money to business people in this city, developing the harbor, East Harbor, the Inner Harbor, and never the rest of the city. And that has been the backroom deals people feel are happening between politicians and those businessmen, which is why maybe she had this jaundiced view of saying, I'm a businessman, I can do this. And why should she believe that you have her interests at heart or the community's interests at heart as opposed to having the interests of those men and women who own the businesses that you and that the finance industry you were part of tanked our country? So people do have questions about the question of businessmen. I think that's what that was the heart of what she was saying.
Yeah, but I think I would just look at my track record of the venture capital company that I've had for 20 years. You know, look at the companies that we've created and the impact that they've had on Baltimore City. It's about what you do when the cameras aren't running. You know, we are all in this together. All politicians aren't bad. All business people aren't bad, right? The fact of the matter is that the politicians who are in this race have had ample opportunity to change the arc of a great American city, and look where we are right now. We need something different.
Let me go back to the tweets here. Vonnie tweeted in, what can you do to improve the remediation rate for Baltimore City? What would you do to increase the graduation rate?
Well, to me, that's a really interesting question, because I don't think the graduation rate has done nothing but go up in the last 5 years. The issue is...
And most of our graduates end up being in remedial programs
exactly. Once
they get to college, if they do go to college.
That's the issue. You know, you want to be able to graduate kids that have a toolkit that allows them to do something post-graduation, because a meaningful percentage of them are not going to go to 2 and 4 year colleges. And one of the real scandals, I think, is the low graduation rate from a 2 or a 4 year university from kids who are graduating from our public high schools, because it's clear that they're not prepared, right? So we need to have kids that are prepared for a lifetime of work, a lifetime of study when they graduate from high school. And one of the things that we do is to create the community school model that we've created at Green Street Academy, where kids are graduating from high school with not only these certifications in energy, that we have a relationship with BG&E and healthcare with our relationship with University of Maryland. These are all scalable things across the city. And technology, we're a Microsoft authorized training academy, and I'd love to be an Oracle training academy. But we can scale those across the city. But we've also taken a proactive path by getting kids excited and enthusiastic about their futures. And I think one of the things that we have to do is have an individual education plan for each kid that starts in middle school and maybe starts even in elementary school, that helps kids with skills assessment and things that they want to do, right? So that we're not continuing to try to create an outcome for that kid when they're in 11th or 12th grade. And again, graduate kids that have a toolkit in their back pocket to compete in today's global economy. If we do that, then we won't need as much remediation when they get to college, and the kids will have choices.
So we only have a couple minutes left. I had another question, but I don't know how to get my question in, unless you have a final quick thought. I mean, I know that there was a question at the LBS forum the other night about what you would do, what people would do as mayor to ensure that money goes to grassroots activists and not just to the same, for the most part, white-dominated organizations in our town. How do you guarantee that, or do you want to guarantee that?
Well... I talked about the fact that it was ironic that there wasn't a head of a major foundation in our city other than Associated Black Charities that wasn't a person of color.
Right.
I'm the guy that brought that up, right? And I think that that's something that that as a mayor, I will use my moral persuasion at the least to rectify over a period of time. You know, one of the things I'm most proud of over the last 5 years is that the Warnock Foundation, which is my foundation, it's not my dad's foundation or anybody else's foundation, has created the Social Innovations Journal. And we have funded tens of young social entrepreneurs, including some right here at Morgan, helping coach them so that they can get prepared to go to those foundations, get bigger money out of those foundations, and create an impact on Baltimore. Because, you know, I think that the social innovators in Baltimore, one of the most unhighlighted and unheralded things about Baltimore is the amazing social innovators in the city. And I'm proud to be able to have coached and financially backed a whole bunch of them.
So, David, how do people get in touch with your campaign?
David Warnock for Baltimore.com. And please remember, we're going to be doing our ride to work with David Warnock on Thursday. So, email us, Twitter us, hit us on Facebook. Tell us the commute that you think I need to take to really understand what's going on in public transportation. Vote for us on April 26th. It's the most important election of a generation, and I'm proud to be working to write the greatest turnaround story in America for a city we all love.
David Warnock, thank you so much for stopping by the city once again. It's been a pleasure to talk to you again.
Yep.
See you Thursday night.
Yep.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves, Morgan Barber, who's here today, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org, to podcast The Steiner Show, and share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org, or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for the home of the 2016 mayoral debate, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.